Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to episode 380 of Geek Town Radio. I am back this week with...
To infinity and beyond!
Matt, how are you doing?
Feeling a lot of emotions this week, but I'm very good. how are you?
I'm very, very well. So what's been happening with you?
I finished a bad TV show and also watched a penalty shootout yesterday. So, yeah, just a 50-50 game in it, penalties. But I shall mention that a bit later. The bad TV show that I finished is called Killing Eve.
This is interesting. I watched the first couple of seasons of it and then I heard that the writing dramatically dropped off as the show went on because there were, what, 4 seasons of it, wasn't there?
Yeah, the third one was when things started to slip away a little bit, but there was still something there. Phoebe Waller-Bridge left after the first season. She's listed as executive producer for this season, but she's not the showrunner or anything. It was interesting. I was looking up a couple of things about the ending, and apparently even the author of the book wasn't very happy with what they chose to do at the end,
right?
Which makes sense. Ruined both the main characters.
Great.
Ruined some of the other characters as well, but some of them were just not even, I don't even know how to put what happened to them at the end. I thought what actually happened at the end of the story was very, very stupid. If I was to use a word to describe like going through it, I would choose painful. it was interesting because, I mean, this came out like quite a few months ago and it's just taken me ages to get to it. And as the weeks when that was running kept happening, I kept hearing just worse and worse and worse things. And I thought, okay, the first two seasons were pretty great. Probably shouldn't have lasted longer than a third, and now it's ending with a fourth. So I thought, okay, at least we've got a final season booked for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the third, like some people have said, it started to really, really fall away. I still thought it was like okay to good from what I remember, but just wasn't as good as what it was before. And then I started, even from the opening episode right through to the, because it's 8 episode season, to the finale, this just kept making these choices for these characters. You've got things like characters not being able to decide if they want to kill other people, because it's like this network of sort of assassins. The show had also gotten to a point where it had basically changed its plot. It was no longer about killing Eve anymore. It had introduced new things. It was a point where you could tell that the show had just lasted too long. And because people really like Sandra Oh as Eve and Jodie Comer as Villanelle, we'll just keep making the show. And just on those two as well, it's really, really disappointing because, nothing that happened in the show is their fault. Obviously, they're just doing a script. They're doing their acting job. But it's a shame to see such talent go to waste.
Yeah.
There's a term called queer baiting as well, which can be used for like, you know, straight relationships as well, I suppose, of just teasing a will they won't they thing throughout the whole season. And although they don't fully do what could be described as queer baiting, they do what I would say is a version of it, mm-hmm. which I thought was incredibly frustrating. I thought the ending was really quite bad. And it's a shame that happened to the show. But it just, as the episodes kept going on, characters were just making these choices. And it just, I don't know. Anyway, what have you sort of seen about this season?
I kind of remember that because it ended last year and
yeah.
I kind of dropped away from it in the second season. I really loved the first season and there's some great writers on that first season. You know, I mean, it mm-hmm. was Phoebe Waller-Bridge. George Kay wrote an episode who's the person that's behind Criminal on Netflix, which is phenomenal.
Leap In and
he's written a whole bunch of other things as well. They're doing a thing with his producing partner from Criminal. They're doing an Apple series called Hijack, which I'm sure will be incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one of the writers on the first season. Phoebe was there. Vicky Jones was there. And they switched showrunners each season. And I'd heard that it just hadn't been sort of great and didn't end well. So I was like, well, I'm not really going to bother going back to watch it now then, because I don't want to waste my time going through effectively 2.5 seasons that I hadn't finished for it to end badly. You know, Lauren Neal, who's the showrunner on the final season, actually has an overall deal with MGM at this point, although I don't know whether that was prior to the Amazon takeover, so I don't know whether that deal still stands at this point. She hasn't actually got any other credits at the moment after Killing Eve, but then it did only end a year ago and she's working on new shows. And I mean, she was fairly experienced. I mean, she did episodes of Sex Education, she did episodes of Secret Diary of a Call Girl, so you know, she had some talent, but apparently that last season got away from us.
And one of the big mistakes, I mean, there's a lot of mistakes the season makes. It tries so hard with symbolism, and tries to make these characters go, oh, look, this is the reason they're doing this thing, but we're going to really, really, really let you know that this is why, with like deliberate, I mean, I don't mind like religious symbolism, or is it like, you know, if you write something well, then, you know, I'm welcome to it. But when you try as hard as that and you're just like, oh, look at the religious symbolism and like, for example, a character will be doing something and there'll be like an image of Jesus or something on the wall, or an image of like an angel or something. And then the camera will go back and forth and back and forth. And it's like, I get it. Just like finish the scene. You just look at the end choice and everybody, because I was reading like online stuff afterwards and everyone was just like, why did you do that for? So, unfortunately, a big disappointment. The show I've been enjoying very much, been going on Apple TV Plus, is a Big Door Prize. Just had a good chunk of episodes right at the moment. I'm very much enjoying that. I think it's kind of an interesting, different idea. It's amazing, isn't it? You put this like machine into a town and a little card will like change people's lives. But because people will sort of, I mean, there's characters in the show that sort of, oh, don't really quite fully buy into that. And that's how discussions go forward with the characters and people literally sort of in the show changing their careers. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that, I won't spoil it, but the card that the main character gets and you're like, oh, right. Okay. That's interesting. Now, I saw the episode yesterday with all the basketball stuff. That was quite a good one. So I'm caught up on the show. I got renewed very, very early, didn't it? I think when the first episode almost came out. So
yes, well, it's Apple, been enjoying it.
Yeah, I do have a question about a renewal for a show in a minute, but we'll get to that shortly. But no, very much enjoying that. Chris O'Dowd, who I really like, obviously from the IT crowd and stuff. He's been very good in the show. As I always say, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing shorter but very good 30-minute episodes.
Yeah.
So the show is very good at doing that. Have you seen that at all?
I've seen the first few episodes of it. I've got to go back to it. It's one of those things that I just forget to click on Apple when I'm looking for things. So I do need to go back and watch the rest of it. But I really enjoyed the first couple of episodes. I like the way that it's sort of like an anthology, but isn't, because it's a core cast, but they focus on one character each time.
They do that very well,
and
I think.
The way that it transitions each episode, you kind of get a hint in each episode of which character they're going to focus on next. And I rather like the way that they do that. The basic premise of it is this machine shows up in the local store and they get a card out of it that tells them what their life's potential is. And it completely changes this town because everybody gets obsessed by what they could be because of what this machine tells them that they could be. And I really like how they've put it together, how it moves from one character to another with each episode, and you know, but all the core cast is still there. Really, really nicely put together, and very, very enjoyable. It's based on a book as well. It's another book adaptation. So I think it's a really lovely series. It's quite gentle in the comedy as well. It's not sort of too over the top or in your face. I really, really enjoy it. It's been a good series from the first few episodes I've seen. I do need to go back and watch the rest of it though.
Yeah. Just a fun little thing I wanted to mention as well. I mentioned this months ago, but I kept forgetting to. Annabelle Davis, who's Warwick Davis's daughter, turned up in Hollyoaks. She's called Lacey Lloyd. Quite a nice character. There's some, obviously, you know, got your villainous sort of mean characters in the show, but she's obviously, you know, got herself caught in some drama, because who isn't in these types of shows? She's been kind of a welcome addition. She's part of this sort of like group of friends. She was introduced with this other character who's like this online influencer, which the show hasn't really done things like, because it, like, Hollyoaks is the one that's the more younger audience targeted. They'll have like some of the younger characters. surprised they haven't really done that sort of thing up until now. Like, they obviously, you know, they do FaceTime and online stuff and that sort of thing, but she does online influencer stuff, and she's sort of like, not really her assistant, but she's her friend that sort of helps her with stuff as well. So yeah, it's good to see her in this. Hopefully she's in it for a while, because I mean, some of these characters, you get them in there for about 5 to 10 years, and some of them only last a couple of months. Any thoughts on that at all?
Well, I haven't watched Hollyoaks in a long time, and she's also, I mean, she's been in some of the Star Wars stuff. She was in Willow as well. She pops up in that. I mean, it's lovely that she's followed her in her dad's footsteps. I've interviewed Warwick a number of times, and I mean, Warwick's wonderful, wonderful person. It's hilarious when he turns up at a Comic Con, because there have been occasions where he'll literally turn up in the afternoon and just kind of sign a bunch of things and then leave, you know, so not really being kind of announced beforehand. There's been a couple of occasions where he's sort of done that. The only time he really talks to us as press is when he's flogging something, you know, if he's got like a big show coming up or something like that, he'll come and do press stuff. But he's always wonderful, he's always charming, he's has an acting company made up of little people as well, which is brilliant, and they do like completely standard shows, but it's all a cast of little people, which is, he's just great. Hopefully she'll be around for a while, but like I say, I mean, she pops up in films alongside her dad and, you know, various other things, so
she's pretty good in that. So that's what I've been up to, some very good stuff and some bad stuff as well. What about yourself?
Well, we had a couple of big finales this week, with The Mandalorian and Picard both finishing their seasons. Picard sort of finishing overall, The Mandalorian finishing this season, although I'm not entirely sure what they're doing next with that, because I don't think they've specifically said, oh, there is another season in development, which is not unusual for Star Wars, because they're kind of like that. But we know we've got Ahsoka coming up. We know that we've got a film coming up, but they have said that's 6 or 7 years away, and the film will tie together all of the sort of Dave Filoni-verse stuff. So Mandalorian, Rebels, Ahsoka, all the live action stuff and the animated stuff, which they cross over quite a lot. So that's all going to get packed into sort of one kind of end game type of film. But I really liked how they ended The Mandalorian this time around. It does feel like it's very much kind of a bookend to that initial arc of Mando and Grogu, and leaving them in a sort of nice place where you could potentially come back, but maybe put a time jump in. So maybe Grogu's grown up a little bit, possibly, next time we come back. I mean, this is all speculation. We don't know anything. But I really liked how they finished that. I thought it left everything in interesting places. The Mandalorians are sort of back on Mandalore. You've got Mando and Grogu kind of relaxing in between missions, but they've got things that they could be doing as well. So it leaves everything in quite an interesting place for them to be able to go and pick things up, but also rounds things off quite nicely. So I thought that was quite good.
Yep. Really, really enjoyed this season. I kind of do understand some of the comments about, okay, this is really great, but sort of where is it going? Mm-hmm. I understand that, but I think it's almost got like a different aim. Continuing with what I said, I think a few weeks ago on here, the show is very good at starting the episode off with a side plot or sort of side quest. I keep thinking of calling them side quests, because that's what they kind of,
yes,
that's what they
kind of feel is,
like.
Yeah.
But it'll do like the Witcher effect, which is make you feel like it's a main important thing. I mean, some of the things that do happen that could be considered like side parts are actually quite important sort of events, and quite sort of like the stakes are quite high on some of them. So you can almost kind of not really forgive, because there's not really anything there to forgive, but kind of ignore that. Okay, you got Mando and Grogu, and like, what are they doing? And can we push the main plot forward? And they do by the end of the season. But yeah, it's one of the few shows, maybe one of the only shows, that is able to make you invested in the side stuff. But then the side stuff doesn't involve, it's not like it has B plots with B characters. It's got like its main characters just going off to do random things. I mean, there is still a number of, Mando will get in a ship, go to this thing, land on a planet, and then something will sort of like distract him. And then there's other things like, an event will happen that will distract the whole main group, which will then take them away for an episode. But it doesn't feel sort of like, can you please get back to the main plot, because side stuff's still so interesting. I really, really like the development with Grogu this season. I think they did quite a lot with him.
Yeah.
Just from like a pure fun standpoint, the amount of times that Grogu was sort of flipping around or jumping from a chair into somebody's arms, if you do that a bit clumsily, it would look quite silly.
Yeah.
Like the way this sort of little guy is just flipping around and stuff. Not even just from fights, but from just jumping from thing to thing. There's like a bit in the season finale when he's on the ground and he just flips straight into this like high chair and starts eating. So that was quite fun. But just little nice little great touches like that. And especially, I won't spoil it, but the addition of the robot and everything that Grogu could do with that. Like that was really, really good. And it's these little ideas they did for Grogu this season that just gave him more things to use and more things to do. Because I know Grogu's very good with the Force, but physically Grogu is a little bit more of a limited character. Mm-hmm. So making him able to do these other things, I just thought added to the scenes quite well. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. And again, you've got Giancarlo Esposito in there as well, which is always a good thing.
Yes, so. That's never a bad thing.
Yes. Yes.
So moving on from Star Wars to Star Trek, Picard finished as well this week. That last season is just great. It's kind of what I wish they'd done throughout the entire thing, because the first couple of seasons were very all over the place, and that third season really, really pulls things together. Terry Maitlis, who is showrunner on that third season, he's just done a wonderful job of creating this beautiful love letter to Next Generation and giving those characters a really nice send-off, because we're probably not going to see that group together again. It's interesting how they came to the end of that, and they avoided a lot of the sort of really tropey things that they could have done of having somebody sort of sacrifice themselves to save everybody else, and put in some lovely Easter eggs as well, just for Star Trek in general. There was some great little bits of misdirection about who the big bad was this season. It's well constructed. It's been one of the most solid seasons of Star Trek I think they've done in a very, very long time. And there are moments where you do sort of think, how on earth are they going to get out of this? And they manage it, and it works, and it's believable. Sets things up at the end of it for another potential spin-off, which they haven't actually ordered it, but Terry Maitlis, the showrunner on it, had been talking on Twitter of kind of, I have an idea for another series. We haven't ordered one yet, so I'm just spitballing things, but there is potential for a thing called Star Trek Legacy, or what he referred to as Star Trek Legacy, which would be following the children of some of the Next Generation characters as they head off on a new mission under a new captain. And that series, I think, would be brilliant and could be a really interesting one to follow. It's just they've not ordered it yet, and they have got their hands full at the moment because they've got Starfleet Academy coming. They've got new season of Discovery, final season of Discovery coming. They've got new seasons of Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks after the ones that are coming this year. They've already announced that they've got renewals for that. And there is another thing coming as well, which we'll talk about in a bit. So they've kind of got their hands full right now, but I do hope that they go back to that Star Trek Legacy idea, because I would really, really like to see that show. It would be quite good. You haven't been watching Picard, have you? Because you've not sort of done much of the Next Generation stuff.
No, I tried some of season one. It just didn't quite sort of click for me.
Yeah. I would advise you to go and maybe try and jump in on the third season. I just don't know how well it will work because you don't know Next Generation.
Mm.
So it's difficult to tell. But if you are a fan of Next Generation, throughout the whole of this, there are Easter eggs just scattered all over the place, from certain characters popping up without giving anything away. There are even sort of rather unexpected characters popping up at various points as well, who were sort of relatively minor. Like there's an admiral that pops up who was last seen in the Best of Both Worlds, which was the finale of Next Generation, pops up again in this. I don't want to give away how or why, but yeah, you know, she's sort of one character that pops up. You've got even nods to 12 Monkeys, the TV series, which Terry Maitlis ran prior to this, and even some of the actors pop up in it as well. So there's even sort of nods to other things that he's done in here as well. There was a beautiful little tribute to Anton Yelchin, who played Chekhov in the movie versions and really tragically passed away after a really bizarre accident where a car rolled backwards and crushed him against a wall. It was really, really horrible. But he played Pavlov Chekhov in the movie versions. They actually had a character show up as president of Earth in this. It was only done in a voiceover, but it was son of Pavlov Chekhov, and they called him Anton Chekhov, which I thought was a really nice little nod to the actor that played him in the films. They really, really thought through what they were doing with it, and I thought it was wonderful. Certainly, if you're a fan of Next Generation and you've been not getting on with the first couple of seasons of Picard, jump in on the third season because it is well, well worth it. It's a really, really solid run, and they land it beautifully. I'm very interested to see where that whole sort of Star Trek universe goes from there. On the film side of things, I did actually get round to watching a movie this week. Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania is out on home release to buy. It's not on Disney Plus yet, interestingly. They've actually put it out to buy and given it a sort of streaming pay-for release window on other platforms before they put it directly onto Disney Plus, which is the first time I think they've done that. It's available on places like Sky Store and Amazon and that sort of stuff. I enjoyed it. It's okay. It's missing a little bit of the sort of fun spark, and I think the plot is a little bit all over the place. It feels a bit rushed in places. I mean, the basic premise is you've got Scott, Hope, Janet and Hank, and Scott's daughter Cassie, and they're all pulled down into the quantum realm where they discover a civilization which is being oppressed by somebody called the Conqueror, which we all know at this point is Kang, because I mean that news has been everywhere, currently played by Jonathan Majors. Whether that continues kind of depends on what happens over the next sort of month or so, I think. But it's a good introduction to Kang, who is going to be the big bad for Phase 5 and 6. Whether Majors plays him or not, or whether they have to recast him, is going to be up to them. We'll see where things go with that. You've seen this, haven't you? What did you think?
I did see it. I'm kind of on the same boat as you. I thought it was good. Like, not one of Marvel's worst or best, but I thought it was good. I mean, yeah, we all like Scott and Ant-Man and that kind of stuff. This is more of a Kang film though. It's like the full proper introduction to him and everything. Had some odd choices. I think the thing that takes it down a few notch, and I think I'd spoken about this when I reviewed it before, been a lot of comments in the last, let's say, year or so about Marvel and the whole VFX situation. And yeah. I'd always been on the visual side for me, I'd always been the kind of like, oh, I don't need things to look really pretty. They just need to look sort of decent, but it's the everything else that I care about. Story, characters, plot, whatever. Same goes for games. And there is a lot of emphasis in this day and age about how good things look, especially when it comes to, you know, oh, shiny new PS5 game and that type of stuff. And then I watched this film and it was just like notably worse than like from the visual aspect. Obviously the difference there is you're in the quantum realm for most of the film, as opposed to on location stuff on, you know, a street or a building where it's just going to look the same as what it looks. Mm-hmm. And there was a few just like glaringly really poorly looking bits in the film, to a point where it was distracting, and I was like, I was aware of the VFX issue before that, but that kind of like fully woke me up to the problem, because I thought Marvel, like a big studio like Marvel, you can't have films looking like this going forward, whether it's just normal VFX shots or soundstage or whatever it is that you're using. Because I was, you know, trying to watch the scenes where these characters are having dialogue and all this kind of stuff, and like the background would just look really strange. And I saw this, you know, in the cinema on the big screen, so it was a bit more, glaring. That was like one of the worst aspects of it. I think the film is like saved by Kang. That's not to say the other characters aren't great, but it is really his kind of film. Almost to a point, I've brought this up for a couple of films in the past. I wonder if this film should have had a different title. There's a couple of films you look at and think, okay, changing the title to something better won't make the film better, but it will make more sense. So I think you should have put Ant-Man and something, Kang something. I don't know, like Kang's name not being, I know it is an Ant-Man film, but it is really a Kang film. So I think that would have possibly helped a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Gray kind of mentioned this when he talked about it and said, you know, it is called Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. And whilst Ant-Man is a central character, it is very much a Kang film, and the Wasp is very much a side character, you know. It doesn't really balance that out particularly well, you know. I mean, it is Ant-Man plus Janet, Hank, Cassie and Hope, but it really isn't Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's Ant-Man and Kang, really.
Yeah.
That is going to be an interesting thing moving forward, what Disney end up having to do there, because I mean they have invested a lot in Jonathan Majors and there is a possibility that they may have to recast him. So we'll see what happens with that, but I think you can get away with it because there are a lot of multiverse versions of Kang, and I mean at the moment they've all looked like Jonathan Majors, but I think you can fudge that. I mean, they recast Rhodey after one movie, so you know.
Yeah, because he's locked in for Loki season two, isn't he? I think they filmed all that because that's like coming very soon.
So.
But no, just on that front as well. Yes, if Jonathan Majors is found to be, you know, guilty of what he's done, then yes, he should be replaced in the same way as, you know, Ezra should have. Obviously, that's a longer ongoing situation.
Yes.
I hope Marvel doesn't make the same mistake that Warner Brothers has done on that side, because as good as any actor is in any role, if you've done something bad to a legal point, such as Jonathan Majors has apparently done, we don't know if he has or hasn't definitely done it.
Yes, he says he hasn't, but yes.
But we don't know the situation, but if he's found guilty, then yes, he should be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
But whether they can have the same effect as him as Kang, because he was like very particularly intimidating in the role, which is he's supposed to be, but there's plenty of other really, really great actors out there that, that could do the role.
Yes, we'll see what happens with that. There is one other TV show that I started this week called The Diplomat, which is on Netflix, not to be confused with The Diplomat, which is an entirely different show, which is on Alibi. Yes, there are two shows, both called The Diplomat. One's on Alibi. That's a very British show. This is far more sort of American-British show. It's a mixture of the two. But The Diplomat on Netflix, it's interesting. It's billed as a political thriller. And I was expecting something that's kind of gritty and, you know, intrigue and all that sort of thing when they say it's... And it's not. It's much, much more of a comedy drama. Way more than I kind of expected. It's tonally much closer to something like Succession. So there is a lot of drama in there, but there is this dark comedy element running through it as well. And it is a comedy drama. It isn't really a political thriller. It's a comedy drama that is based around politics. Stars Kerry Russell as Kate Wyeler. Kerry Russell, you'll know from The Americans, is probably the biggest thing she's done. She's used to being this sort of US civil servant in areas that are prone to conflict. So always where the action is, you know, she's that sort of diplomatic presence. She's about to head off to this new assignment in one of these conflict zones. I think it's Kabul or somewhere like that. And a British aircraft carrier is attacked in the Middle East, causing a lot of fatalities and inflaming tensions between the UK, US and Iran, who is suspected of being the people carrying out the attack. President pulls her into the office and says, look, we're not going to send you to this conflict zone. We're going to send you to the UK instead, because things are going pear-shaped and you've got a lot of experience with the Middle East. But the role of ambassador to the UK is sort of usually seen as kind of a cushy holiday job, goes generally to people that have donated a bunch of money to somebody's campaign and they get nominated as an ambassador to the UK because it's a fairly easy gig usually. You know, it's like a lot of parties and schmoozing and that sort of stuff. And of course, with being the UK, there's a lot of sort of pageantry and protocol that comes with the way that we do things over here when it comes to that sort of stuff. So she's very much a kind of fish out of water in that role. She's used to being kind of in there doing stuff, action, getting shot at and that sort of thing. And now she finds herself in this giant mansion in the English countryside and is still dealing with this problem of the Middle East, but this entirely alien world to her. So it's very much this sort of fish out of water thing. On top of that, it also becomes rather apparent that there is an ulterior motive the president have for specifically sending her to the UK for this gig as well. She's joined by her husband, who is a guy called Hal, played by Rufus Sewell, who you'll know from a whole bunch of things, but Man in the High Castle, Victoria, Kaleidoscope, he was in the Netflix series. He is incredibly charming, very, very experienced diplomat himself, well-known ambassador, has contacts everywhere. However, he has rather upset certain people in power in the US, and it's kind of seen him sidelined. So he's sort of working vicariously through his wife. So you've got this relationship going on between the pair of them as well. It's a really, really, really well-written thing. I would say up there with something like Succession in the way that it kind of pulls together, and the cast is great. You've got people like Michael McKean, who you know from Better Call Saul, in there. You've got Rory Kinnear, who plays the British Prime Minister, who has been, you know, years and years, Bond film, Penny Dreadful, Our Flag Means Death, Black Mirror, where he also played a very different Prime Minister in that episode. That was the infamous Prime Minister episode, which I won't go into. David Geise, who's been in Carnival Row and Interstellar, Ali Ann, who was in Raising Dion, Otto Sandow, who was in Altered Carbon and Blue Bloods. really, really great cast in there. That's The Diplomat. It's on Netflix. It's well worth checking out. Not what I expected at all, but really, really solid series. And I would definitely advise you to go and look at that. It's really good. Like I say, it's The Diplomat on Netflix, not The Diplomat on Alibi, which is a very, very different show. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So we kick off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. It's been a busy week at Disney because most of these renewals and cancellations come from Disney. National Treasure, the TV series, has been cancelled by Disney after one season, which, I mean, I didn't watch it, but I can kind of understand that because I think they tried to create a TV series, but I don't think it had any real connection to the films, and that seems to be a bit of a mistake. You know, I think there was a far more interesting way of making a TV series, which could have connected to the Nick Cage movies a lot better. And they went in an entirely different direction. I think that was probably not a great idea.
So I knew this was on the way, but before I was aware that it was out, it had gotten cancelled.
Right, okay.
So that was because I saw that, oh, it's been cancelled, and I was like, oh, I was aware that it was on the way. I'd heard of it, but I didn't know that it had come out.
It was December, actually, so it has been for a while. But yeah, it's just a shame that they didn't do it in a slightly different direction, because I think there was far more interesting things they could have done with that. But anyway,
there is a lot of Disney Plus adverts I see, because one of the adverts at the moment is kind of, oh, you think you know Disney Plus, but they've got all these other brands and like Grey's Anatomy and all this other kind of stuff, which is quite smart for them to do. But National Treasure was not in one of those. I'd seen like YouTube adverts or whatever. It had been Grey's Anatomy, you know, things like Black Panther and Canto, and then obviously like Mandalorian. Even within those things, I hadn't seen any National Treasure.
Yes, man, you won't see any more of it now because it's now gone. So Apple, rare cancellation as well after one season. That was a show called Dear Edward, which didn't get a huge amount of traction. I don't think it starred Taylor Schilling, who was Orange is the New Black, I think was the big thing she was in.
Yes,
and
yes,
had Connie Britton in it as well, you know, so there was some reasonable names in it. It was about a lone survivor of a plane crash, apparently, but unfortunately just didn't find an audience by the sounds of it. So that has gone after one season. Did you ever stumble across that one? Because I did see that
on there, but I hadn't clicked on it. Now
yeah, that's now gone after one season. In terms of the renewals though, as I say, Disney being busy mainly with ABC, Will Trent renewed for a second season, so that is on Disney Plus over here now. I haven't started it yet, but it is one that I want to go and look at.
My dad had started it. He said it wasn't very good, but then I don't know what to make of that. So
right, okay, yeah. I will go and take a look at that soon and see. Good Doctor renewed for season 7. Rookie renewed for season 6. Rookie Fed still doesn't have a renewal at the moment. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with that. I mean, in all honesty, if that doesn't come back, I'm not going to be heartbroken. I don't think it's as good by any stretch of the imagination of the main show. I think part of it is the cast doesn't bond quite as well. And unfortunately, I think Nicey Nash, who is the lead, isn't particularly strong as the lead in that. Sort of suffers from, it's not Nathan Fillion, I think. But I mean, it's fine. It's just, it just doesn't gel quite as well. So maybe they could pull it around with the second season. I mean, The Rookie is far more of an ensemble show at this point, and I just think the casting in the main show is much better. But that's back for a sixth season, the main Rookie anyway. Station 19 has also been renewed for season 7. It's got some new showrunners as well, because the person that was showrunner on Grey's and on Station 19 has moved off to do other things. So Grey's has got new showrunners and Station 19 has got new showrunners as well. They're all people that have been promoted sort of internally had already been sort of writers or exec producers on the show anyway. So the names will probably mean nothing to most people. They're people that know what they're doing basically on those series. That basically leaves The Conners, Home Economics, Comics, Big Sky, and Alaska Daily as the four shows which they need to renew at ABC. Connors will be coming back pretty certainly. It's just because of the way that show was created out of abrupt end of Roseanne revival, they sign year-on-year contracts. So it means they have to renegotiate the contracts every year. So it takes much longer for that to get renewed because they've got to, like, I mean, there's what, six main people in that cast or something. So they've got to do all those contract renewals. Home Economics, Big Sky, and Alaska Daily are all looking quite shaky for renewals because they've all tanked in numbers. So they may come back, they may not. They're very much bubble shows, those three. Reasonable Doubt has been renewed for a second season. That's also a Disney show because that airs on Hulu. Maurice Chestnut, who you'll know from things like The Resident V, American Horror Story, he is joining in the second season as well. First season of that is on Disney Plus in the UK. And in the UK as well, BBC have renewed Blue Lights. That is renewed for a second season as well. In terms of pickups and other news, Waterloo Road back for a 12th season in May, the BBC is confirmed. So that is coming back and fairly quickly. That's quite a quick turnaround because I think the last season only went out towards the end of last year. So they've done a fairly fast turnaround on that. Neighbours over on Amazon Freebie has begun filming. So new episodes of that coming later this year, but they have started filming the new episodes. So if you're a Neighbours fan, that is coming back. Netflix has got a couple of dates as well. Lupin season 3, which was that French language drama, which was a huge success. 5th of October. So that's a way out yet, but season 3 of that has now got an air date. And there is a show called Heartland, which is coming back to Netflix as well. That's got a 16th season. That's coming on the 17th of May. Over on Apple TV, they've announced, it's a bit early to talk about Christmas, but they have announced a Christmas special. Hannah Waddingham, who you'll know from, I mean, just various stand-up, but she's in Ted Lasso as well, which is the big thing she's been in. But she is going to be presenting her own TV special at Christmas for Apple. Delivers a captivating night to remember featuring dazzling performances and musical numbers from the Olivia-nominated actress as well as special surprise guests. So yes, I mean, she has got a background on theatre work and singing and all that sort of stuff. So I think that will be quite a fun thing around Christmas on Apple TV, I think. And she's wonderful. I've seen her on so many different things. She's very, very funny. I don't watch Ted Lasso, but I know you do, so.
Yeah, she's Rebecca on that show. She's the owner of the actual Richmond Football Club, who is the one that hires Ted for the actual manager role. She's done some singing in some actual episodes, like when they've done a karaoke night and that kind of stuff. I'm sure she'll be very, very good in this. I'll be curious to check this out. She's really great.
She is, and she's very, very funny and exactly the sort of person to host this sort of variety show.
Hopefully she'll get a couple of guests from Maybe Brett Goldstein or Jason wants to pop up or something.
Yeah, would not surprise me in the slightest if that happens.
Brett's been making quite the splash recently.
Yeah. There was another TV show in development, that was announced, which, I mean, I have absolutely zero interest in, but there is apparently a Twilight TV series in development. It's from Sinead Daly, who has done things like Tell Me Lies, and she wrote on Walking Dead World Beyond as well. So she's writing the script. Stephanie Meyer, who is the Twilight author, is expected to be involved in the show's development as well. Being developed for Lionsgate, it is in early development. I have very little interest in the films and sparkly vampires, and at this point, no. It's being developed, so it may not turn into anything. We don't know. There's been so many vampire shows out, and that's the one that I really have zero interest in. But I know there is a fan base out there for it, so maybe, but
This is almost is in the exact same boat as Harry Potter, which is they're both very, very recent because they both had all their films and stuff. I mean, I did a whole thing on the Harry Potter thing recently, but yeah, you just like, do you need to spend money on this? Do you need to? Because this, I assume, is going to do the same thing as Harry Potter, which is tell the same story.
Well, they've said with this that it may not. They don't know whether they're going to go back to the books or do something completely original. So we'll see. If it's something original and expands the universe, then yeah, maybe. If they're just going to do the books as a TV series, which is what they're doing with Harry Potter. And well, as I said, with the Harry Potter thing, I kind of get it. I think it's too soon to do it, but I do kind of get it because they cut a lot out of the books to make the movies. So I can see a purpose there. I think it's too soon, But I can see a purpose there. With this, it may be the same thing with the films. To be honest, I find it very difficult to care. And I don't know. If they're going in a different direction, then maybe. But no, I have no interest, really.
See, with the Harry Potter thing, you just did Hogwarts Legacy, which was completely detached from Harry's story and had brand new characters, one of which you make yourself because that's the customizable, playable character. And they told a disconnected, fresh story in the world. And it was great because you have the wizarding world that you can mess about with. I don't know how much you can do that in Twilight in kind of the same way. Maybe you can. I don't know that world near enough as well as Harry Potter. But if you are just going to do, let's say on both sides, you are just going to tell the same story, but a bit longer because it's going to be a season rather than a film, and recast all the people that are in these beloved roles. People really like those actors in those roles. And it's just, they're both so recent.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can do the same sort of like, oh, disconnect from Edward or whatever his name is story and tell a different, I don't know if you can do that as much, but I'm assuming you can't do another sequel or something. So as soon as I saw this, it was the same tired comments of like, oh, why we do, you know, why can't why? You just do, yeah, just why? I mean, there's comments out there of like, oh, why are we always rebooting the same stuff? There is loads and loads and loads of new content, but it's when you come across something like this and you think, why have you chosen to do this? So
money, and there's we'll an audience see. For it.
Well, yes.
So speaking of rebooting and adding things to franchise, but at least this is adding something to a franchise and it is coming back to a character, and there has been a lot of outcry for this. Paramount has announced a Star Trek Section 31 event movie starring Michelle Yeoh. So it's Michelle Yeoh back as Emperor Philippa Georgiou from Discovery as she joins a secret division of Starfleet tasked with protecting the United Federation of Planets and faces the sins of her past. So it's going into production next year. This was originally talked about as a series. Pretty much from the beginning, they've talked about doing this as a series. And then Michelle Yeoh went and won an Oscar. And I think just availability, I suspect it's either availability or cost. I don't know. But they wanted to do something more with that character. And I'm very happy that they managed to find some way of doing it. And I think a movie is a perfectly reasonable way of revisiting that character for this. I'm very happy to have her back. Michelle Yeoh's fantastic. That character of the Emperor was just amazing. And it explores Section 31, which is an area that we've not really looked at that much in Star Trek. It's sort of popped up in the periphery of various different shows, but it's never one that we've really focused on. So I think it's an interesting thing to expand the universe there. I think this will be great.
It's good that they're moving forward with this because I really do love her and her character as well. She's one of them actors that you put her in something, and even if that specific thing isn't good, it'll at least be worth it somewhat because she's in it.
Yes.
So she's one of them, you always kind of win with her sort of thing. I would like more than this. Hopefully they can expand it beyond this as well. But like you said, with popularity and price, that could be a problem. And look, you know, she's worth what she's worth. You know, you wouldn't want her to take a lesser paycheck or something. But it's both of us just saying in terms of we want more of that character. And I hope that they manage to do more than film.
It may end up being a series of films. I mean, you know, Michelle Yeoh clearly likes the character of Emperor Georgiou. So she wants to come back and doing it. I mean, she was the one apparently who originally pitched the idea of a spin-off even before Discovery had started shooting. So she loves the character. She's happy to come back and do it. It may be one of those things that maybe they can do Section 31 movies every couple of years or something and keep the character going. Maybe there is something in that, but I'm very much looking forward to this.
Is that going to have, what was his name? Tyler?
Possibly, yeah, because Tyler was off in Section 31 as well, wasn't he? I think.
Yeah,
so
that was
maybe.
In what, season 2, 3? That was a while ago, yeah.
Yes, going back a bit. So yeah, could very well do with that. She's the only cast that's been announced for it so far. Moving over onto the BBC, they have announced an adaptation of Lord of the Flies, the classic novel. The adaptation's been written by Jack Thorne, who, I mean, he's a multi-award winning writer. He did National Treasure, he did Help, he did This Is England, he wrote Enola Holmes. He actually wrote Harry Potter and the Cursed Child based on the story by J.K. Rowling, but he was the one that actually wrote it. He wrote His Dark Materials as well. It's being executive produced by Eleven, who are the people that did Sex Education. I mean, Lord of the Flies, I think many people will know the story because they covered it in school, but it's a story of a group of young boys who find themselves stranded on a tropical island. In an attempt to remain civil, the boys organise themselves, led by Ralph and supported by the group's intellectual Piggy. But Jack, who's in charge of signal fire duty, is more interested in hunting and vying for leadership and begins to draw the other boys away from the order of the group and ultimately from hope to tragedy. It's a very, very well-known story. It's very, very very well-known story from William Golding, who actually won the Nobel Prize for Literature. Amazingly, there have been a couple of movie adaptations. It's never been made into a TV series before, which I'm really, really surprised about, because it is such a huge, well-known book. There have been things that have taken ideas from Lord of the Flies and sort of, you know, done versions of it without directly copying it, but this will be a solid, straight adaptation of the book itself. I rather like the sound of this. I mean, incredible writer behind it. No casting, but I mean, the cast will all probably be newcomers anyway. I'm really interested in this. It's surprising just though that it's never had a TV adaptation before.
Yeah, that is surprising. There's one that I'm like aware of and that sort of thing. So we'll see what they can do with this. It's got some promise behind it. That Cursed Child, that's a sequel play to the last film, isn't it?
Yes.
But they haven't made that into a film for some reason.
No,
I'd rather them do that than the TV series.
Yeah, everybody else has sort of said, why didn't they do that or build, you know, start off with doing a TV version of that and then build from it, you know?
Yeah, but anyway, this sounds like it could work. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and a phenomenal writer behind it. I mean, Jack Thorne is an amazing writer. I mean, you love the
not a bad CV.
certainly not. And that's just some of the stuff. I mean, the rest of it is, it's to say, His Dark Materials, Enola Holmes, This Is England, Help, National Treasure. I mean, just phenomenal TV stuff. So over on Netflix, they have ordered a new sci-fi called The Burrows, which is from both the team behind Stranger Things and the team behind The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. It's exec produced by Duffer Brothers, who are the Stranger Things guys, and Jeffrey Addis and Will Matthews, who were behind the Age of Resistance, Dark Crystal. Those are the people that basically pitched it to them. It's set in a seemingly picturesque retirement community in the New Mexico desert, where a group of unlikely heroes must band together to stop an otherworldly threat from stealing one thing that they don't have, time. And reading that description, it's sort of interesting and feels very much in the Duffer Brothers sort of wheelhouse and the type of thing that they would get involved with, because while Stranger Things is very much a love letter to those sort of child-led 80s movies like The Goonies, this does sound very reminiscent of another big 80s film called Cocoon, which was about a retirement community being visited by aliens. I think this will be a very different direction to that, in the same way that, you know, Stranger Things isn't The Goonies, but it sort of feels like in that wheelhouse to me. I mean, great people behind it. It's called The Burrows. I think this sounds like it could be quite interesting.
Very much could. Yeah, there's a lot of good things behind this. It's interesting that this has come up, because I had a theory, I think it was a couple of months ago when I did that Dear Netflix, Please Stop episode, and it was basically a recap of recent mistakes that they've made. And one of the things, there was a lot of things I mentioned in that, but one of the things I mentioned was a few notable creators that had made what I would consider successful shows, because apparently according to Netflix, they've never cancelled a successful show, which I think most of us would disagree with.
Yes.
But one of the things I had in there was sort of like creators of previous things that had made new things, or like people like Mike Flanagan that was known for like the Netflix event horror guy, you know, that kind of thing, who's now gone over to Amazon. And I was looking at kind of who's left on, who's still there on the table, because you had like the Dark creators that made, they finished Dark, and then they did 1899, that got cancelled. So we'll see if they come back. Dark Crystal also did get cancelled as well. A lot of people were really disappointed by Stranger Things. I don't think Netflix could cancel, because that would be a disaster.
Yes.
Plus it's ending with a fifth season. And I looked and thought, okay, which big creator do they have left that's making something big? And I landed on the Duffer Brothers. And it's just, you know, just a guessing, me doing analysis, like theory thing. So I could be totally wrong. I hope I'm wrong about it, because I hope that the show's good and that it gets the finish that it needs to. That's what should happen with this. But one of the kind of theories I had was, okay, Duffer Brothers, Stranger Things, success, you know, pop culture sort of phenomenon. Okay, so what if they come back and they do another show, which is what we have here? So one of the theories I had was, okay, if Netflix, because they have they've calmed down recently on cancellations, but I mean, you can't keep doing that because you'll run out of shows.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they make a bunch of stuff, but like the big notable stuff, you can only cancel so much of that, because otherwise you'll run out of things. So what would happen if they canceled this, let's say after 1, 2, or 3 seasons, whatever it would be, and then you annoy the Duffer Brothers? What would kind of happen there? I hope none of that happens. I hope that they're able to tell the story they want to tell, and it gets the amount of seasons it needs, just like Stranger Things. Because one way Netflix, because if I'm putting on, you know, the Netflix brain for a minute, they could look at this and maybe think, okay, if this isn't, this is from the same people that have done Stranger Things, if it isn't as successful, what do we do with that?
Yeah.
They could be thinking that. It's a silly thought because it doesn't have to be a successful Stranger Things, but that's kind of the way they operate sometimes. So we'll see. But like I said, hope this goes well. It's got some good people behind it. What do you think of my kind of
I mean, theory? The other thing is whether this is just a one-off thing. They've had quite a lot of success recently with one-off dramas. The Harlan Coben stuff, which are self-contained. I mean, they've adapted so much of that stuff, but they are all one-off self-contained things. And as I said, A Diplomat, which I'm watching at the moment, I don't know whether that's going to be a one-off self-contained thing or whether they're going to make more of it, but they do very well with those one-off self-contained dramas and TV shows. So if it's one of those, great. If they need to make more of it, I would hope that they give them the leeway to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's tricky. I think the problem is that there are certain shows that, like, I mean, Warrior Nun, there was a big outcry when they cancelled that after two seasons.
Yeah.
And not everything can be a massive global hit. Sometimes you need to be able to kind of go back and say, okay, it's not making as much as it needs to, so what can we do? Rather than just going, well, that's not worked, can it? Which it really does feel sometimes like algorithm says no, and they just like, you know, it does feel a bit like that. And I don't know how it works internally at Netflix, but it does rather feel like there is some computer brain that's just gone, not enough numbers, cancel it, rather than actually having human intervention. Like, look at Apple and Amazon, where they have renewed things before they've even gone to air because they go, okay, we like this, we think it's the type of thing we should be airing, let's put more of it on. Whereas Netflix is sort of throw enough mud at the wall and see what sticks approach really starts to upset fans, because you then get some shows which aren't getting the numbers that they need to, but have got a very dedicated core fan base, and you end up cancelling them. So that upsets a lot of people, and you get a bad rap for that. So they need to figure that out. It's their cancellation policy they need to work out.
There's a lot of ways they could learn from Apple, but one particular way, if you've got a reputation for, let's say, after one, two, or three seasons cancelling things, maybe don't keep commissioning shows that need five or eight seasons or something, maybe, because there have been a number of Apple shows that have been very, very good. They've lasted maybe some one season, some have been two, or you've got like Ted Lasso, which is like going to be four. They've had a lot of three season shows on there,
three or four
season example of that, and they've had quite a lot of limited series. So if you don't want to have a situation where you're renewing something for 5 to 8 seasons, then maybe commission some shows that are only going to actually have a story built for two or three, because then instead of cancelling something after three, you could just commission a show that's only going to last three seasons and just finish it.
Yeah.
Like Dark's a good example of that, like they did with that. So
As we were talking earlier about shows that are getting remade or movies that are getting remade into TV shows, Paramount Plus are having a stab at Galaxy Quest once again, which is interesting because this has moved around from various streaming services. I think Amazon had a go at it at one point. It's now at Paramount Plus, which is slightly ironic given that the thing that Galaxy Quest was a satire of was Star Trek. Paramount Plus is the home of Star Trek, the thing that it was parodying in the first place. So it's kind of an odd place for it to land, but I think they just have the rights to it as through, I don't think they did originally. I don't think they were directly involved in the original film, but through various mergers and things, it's ended up with them having the rights to it. If you haven't watched Galaxy Quest, you can actually go and find it on all four right now. It's brilliantly funny. Go and watch it. But it's a story of a group of actors who are on this Star Trek-like TV show, and they are abducted by aliens who believe the actors are actually the characters from their TV show, and they're abducted by these aliens to try and save the galaxy. It's really, really funny. It stars Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, the late Alan Rickman, Tony Schlob, Sam Rockwell, a bunch of other people as well. It's got a great cast. Very, very funny film. This latest attempt at a live action series is in the early stages of development to Paramount Plus. Has the original film producer Mark Johnson involved in it, who also, after producing this, went on to do things like Breaking Bad and the Interview with the Vampire series on AMC. He's attached as exec producer. There's no writer, no cast, no director attached at the moment. There have been a couple of other attempts to do this, as I mentioned. The original idea was to do a direct sequel, and the closest they got to that was in 2015 with a sequel series at Amazon Studios with the film's original co-writer and director involved. That unfortunately stalled when Alan Rickman passed away of pancreatic cancer in 2016, and they weren't sure what they were going to do now they'd lost one of the main cast members. It was then revived in 2017 with a guy called Paul Scheer writing, and he had the idea of making a sort of next generation idea. So they bring in some of the original cast, but also bring in new cast as sort of moving forward. That was the idea with that. That sort of stalled as well. Then randomly in an interview in 2021, Georgia Pritchett, who has worked on things like Veep and Succession, revealed that she'd actually been working on a script alongside Simon Pegg for a new Galaxy Quest series, although things have gone quiet on that. So whether they're involved in any of this version, I don't know. But she apparently mentioned that she was working on that. So we don't know what direction this new iteration is going to take, whether it's going to use the original cast, whether it's going to be a complete reboot of the movie idea, whether it's going to be a continuation. Just don't know at the moment. But I love the film. I like the idea of this sort of parody thing. I think it was a really lovely idea of sort of the actors from the TV show being mistaken for being sort of these galactic heroes. I'm up for them doing something with this. I just don't know exactly how they're going to approach it. We'll have to wait and see with that. Have you seen that film?
I'm aware of it, but I don't think I've seen it. No.
Really should go watch.
It sounds quite fun, though.
It is.
The whole idea with this. So yeah, as long as you get some good money behind it and that kind of stuff, I think this could be quite fun.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can go and watch it on what was All 4, but I think has now been branded just as Channel 4 to confuse things. But you can basically go on to the Channel 4 website and stream it because it is available on there. So if you want to go and catch it, you can go and watch the original film if you haven't watched it. I do urge you to go and see it. It is very, very, very funny. As I say, in early development at Paramount at the moment, we'll find out in the next sort of 12 months or so whether anything actually happens with it. That's all the news we've got for this week. Just some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. As 911 Lone Star disappears for a mid-season break, 911, the main show, is back for the second half of its sixth season. That's coming to Disney Plus on the 26th of April. The Curse returns for a second season on the 27th of April. That's at 10 p.m. on Channel 4. That's the thing about the comedy caper set in London in the 80s, a gang of hopeless criminals that are embroiled in one of the biggest gold heists in history. It's basically a comedy version of The Gold, the BBC series, although it came first. That was very, very funny, the first season of that, so I'm glad that's back. Inside Number 9 returns for a season 8. That's on BBC Two on the 27th of April at 10 p.m. as well. La Brea, the wonderfully silly series about a sinkhole opening in the middle of Los Angeles, that returns for the second half of season 2. That's on the 27th of April as well. Guilt returns for its third and final season. That's on BBC Two at 9 p.m. on the 27th of April. Sweet Tooth returns for its second season. That's on the 27th of April on Netflix. That was a great series. There is a new show called Citadel, which is an action spy thriller from the Russo brothers, which stars Prokina Chopra-Jonas and Richard Madden and Stanley Tucci. That's turns up on Prime Video on the 28th of April. That's called Citadel. That looks like it's going to be quite good.
That sounds quite good, yeah.
Yeah. Fatal Attraction is a TV series based on the popular film of the same name. That turns on Paramount Plus on the 1st of May. And Perry Mason, they finally settled on a date for when it's going to land on Sky Atlantic, having jumped it around a bit. But 2nd of May, that lands on there. So that is the return of Matthew Rhys as Perry Mason for that. That is everything we've got for this week. I forgot to mention earlier, happy birthday, by the way, because it was your birthday last week. And it is, I think, Daryl's birthday.
We've all got like our birthdays at once or something, haven't
yes,
we?
Weirdly, all the co-hosts have their birthday over the next couple of weeks. It's Daryl's birthday later this week. It's Gray's birthday at the end of the week. It's my birthday next week. And it's Bex's birthday at the end of next week. So yeah, all the co-hosts really have their birthdays within 2 weeks. There's no reason for that other than that's just how it happened. So yes, happy birthday to you, Matt, and happy birthday to Daryl as well for later in this week. But if people want to find more of your stuff, where can they find you?
If you do want to hear more from me, you can go to entertainmenttalk.org or your favourite podcast platforms. Do TV, games, films, Main Night Podcast, the Unusual Stuff, Gaming Talk, a couple of film reviews here and there, some TV stuff I've done as well. Big stuff going on with Man United at the moment. Of course, we had a very, very intense penalty shootout yesterday, putting us into the FA Cup final, a chance at another trophy. So two cup finals in one season. No, nobody would have told you that we would have done that a year ago. So big progress there. But the FA Cup final against Manchester City. So, you know, big stakes are on the line. Very big stakes are on the line. Also, the first time that's ever happened as well. Obviously, we played City like all the time, but for an FA Cup final, yeah. So the chance to step up is one of the biggest games of some of their careers, I think. So yeah, just a bunch of TV, game, films, Man United stuff on there. I am trying to stream my own little FIFA career mode on Twitch, like an hour once a week or so. That's on eTalk UK over on Twitch. If you missed the first two episodes, if you want to check those out, that's on YouTube. Entertainment Talk Plays, and that is me.
Go and check Matt out on entertainmenttalk.org. For other people involved in the show, you can of course go and find Bex on twitch.tv/TristaBytes. That's BYTES. She is streaming every week for lots of fun and silliness over there. She's also been at a couple of live events recently, so you can check her out. Go and check out her schedule and stuff over on twitch.tv/TristaBytes. For Daryl, you can go and find him over at HollywoodNorthNews.net for all those TV series that you love that are shot in Canada. And for us, you can visit the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest airdate information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.